Hey, everybody. Car show, in case you couldn't tell, where I take my life into my own hands and pilot a vehicle and talk, unless that's against the laws and regulations of this wonderful land we call Earth America, in which case I am not doing that whatsoever. Just returned from a trip to Los Angeles, California, United States, the world. I feel like there's this whole thing, because every time I go somewhere, I have 100 things to say about the airport and airplane travel and stuff, and that's everything about that has probably been said. I feel like, though, every time there's something, and if every... Maybe this is a good a political platform, right? If you're a candidate and you're like, well, I just want to be a candidate, I don't fucking know what to fix. If every hack stand-up comedian is complaining about it, maybe that should be the thing. I mean, everybody complains about, you know, even people who are not comedians. I feel like everyone has an airplane chunk, if you will. If you just bring up flights, if you bring up, this is the worst flight I ever have, everybody goes into this, like, you know, Dennis Leary rant kind of mode. Even if they don't normally do that, I feel like you can get everyone into that headspace. And air travel is the topic that does it. Always. It's, like, without fail, you know, maybe you could talk about food or traffic or whatever, and some people will kind of go and some people won't. But airline travel is, like, a hit every time. So that's my whole excuse of why I'm talking about this, although I feel like some fairly novel things happened on this time, my trip at the bus of the skies, which it really is. I can't help but feel like they really make no effort to make this not the bus of... How long until there's a homeless person on a plane sleeping and peeing, which seems to be what they do on the bus? I don't know why. I guess they just pee it. Where they are, maybe. Get off and pee. You don't have to just pee where you are. Also, I mean, how many times have you seen someone... Have you ever seen someone emerge from an airplane with a vacuum? Anyone fucking vacuuming these things ever at all? I really don't... I don't know. I feel like they fly a plane, they take it to the airport, however the hell they do that, and that's it. However clean it is then, it's only getting dirtier. Do they clean the bathroom? I don't see anyone coming off there with a fucking toilet brush. Do you? Have you ever seen one of those backpack vacuums? I'll grant you, they've probably used the carpet sweep. Because that, you know, the invention they made to give hostesses at restaurants something to do. Because they're like, I am resentful of paying this lady. I'd like to buy something that costs $13. I don't care if it actually does anything. I just want, when I'm paying someone, to tell them to do something besides text. What do you got? And they're like, well, we'll attach the bottom part of a vacuum to a stick, which doesn't make the vacuum suction part of the vacuum. It's just a stick. And you just sort of roll it over the carpet. Maybe it picks stuff up, maybe not. It won't make anything dirtier. And you say, that's what I'm looking for. Just a task. Just a simple task to really give someone value to their life. It seems easy, too, because I don't know a lot about science. But it seems to me that if on every 10th flight, you just had those oxygen masks come down, you crack a window, all the garbage is going to get sucked right out the window. I mean, every time I sit down now, there's bottles or, like, a Cheetos bag or whatever. And by the way, none of it's airline-themed. If I at least thought that it was, you know, purchased on the airplane. There's not a McDonald's on this airplane, is there? Because there's a lot of McDonald's leftover stuff in the seat pocket. Are they ever cleaning the seat pocket? If they don't clean a Cheetos bag that's just jammed between the two seats, what are the odds they're cleaning the back seat? The pocket there. And how come there's no fucking garbage can on the plane? I was talking to somebody about this, and she was like, yeah, how come when they're going up and down the aisle, they just always have a garbage bag? They don't have any kind of trash can. So what am I supposed to do with my trash? I just have to wait until they come around to collect it? That seems like a good plan. How about at my house, instead of garbage cans, I just wait until someone shows up with a bag. And whatever needs to be done with the trash in the meantime, you know, I can put it anywhere next to me where I can reach from the couch. That's it. Or in the bathroom. I don't know. So, you know, I do have to say, though, I don't know if there's one janitor who's just sleepy and hasn't cleaned at all, but I think the lowest of the low of the airline employees are the counter people, the ticket people. I used to think security, because they seem pissed off. But let's be honest, how great is that? That's never going to be, like, fun to go through the security thing. And, you know, I'm sure they're tired. I swear to fucking God, I heard this lady complaining about having to take her shoes off because she was, like, 70-whatever. And she's like, oh, I don't have to take my shoes off, but I still have to take my laptop out and put my bag through and stuff. And the guy's like, yes, ma'am. And she's like, well, that's not much of a deal. I was like, well, what do you want? Just if you're old, you don't have to do anything? Because if that's the... I would say olds need even more. When am I likely to blow up a plane? Never. Okay? Never. So, just getting that out there. But when am I more likely to? At 30, when my body works properly and, you know, there's still life after love, as Cher would say? Or is it when I'm 80 and there's nothing left to look forward to and I'm about to get on an airplane, which is the pain train, because if I don't move my hip every 2 hours, it just freezes in place? I would say the old man's the most likely candidate. Nothing to live for. Although, you've gone that long, so maybe not. I don't know. But I think the counter people where you go and, like, check your bags and get your tickets are the worst. Because they just seem like ain't nobody got time for that. You know what I mean? They don't give a fuck. Which is crazy, because it's like, this is usually the first person you see at the airport. Like, you park, you go through all that, that's all automatic. There's no, it's not like there's a friendly gentleman operating the fucking elevators. You know, oh, which floor? Oh, great. You get on the train, it's just a robot voice or whatever. So this is like your first greeting to the airport, the beginning of your journey, really, in terms of human-to-human perspective. And what do? They look at a screen, they say, passenger last name, Dirk. And then you know, it's like, do I put my thing on the scale? I feel like if you put it on the scale before they ask, they yell at you. And if you don't put it on the scale without them asking, then they yell at you when it's time. I don't know when it's time to put it on the scale. I don't work here. You could have a thing that just says, put it on the scale now and not before. That's an option for you to do. That's not an option for me to do. I guess I could just ask you, at what point in this transaction, before I begin, at what point in this transaction should I put my bag on the scale? You just let me know. I want to make sure that your day is good. I mean, one of us is kind of at work here and one of us isn't, but I think that things should go your way. So we go through that. So I go through the whole thing, you know. And by the way, at this point, you just go up to this kiosk and you do their entire thing yourself. And it's like the grocery store. It's the self-check at the grocery store. I have to scan my shit, get my boarding pass, pick a seat. It even sells me on, like, hey, you want to maybe go to first class starting at $150? How come they can't just tell me how much it actually costs? It's a fucking computer. Couldn't you tell me if that's an option and how much it would cost? And shouldn't you, like, if the first class seats aren't full, just be like, hey, man, for $50 you can upgrade? Because what the fuck difference does it make to the airline if you sit in the front or the back? That's an extra $50 for them to do nothing. It's not like they're cleaning the larger seat. That's forgot. Maybe that's what first class is. I've never been in first class. Maybe they're vacuuming that part and that part only. I don't know. Maybe there's a whole cleaning supplies closet up there. So I get up to the thing, I do the whole checkout myself, and I push print boarding pass, which was a big yellow button in the lower right. There was also another button that said print receipt, which was a tiny gray button in the lower left. which I did not press and even speculated on why one would press that. Because why would you print a boarding pass and then a receipt for that boarding pass? Oh, well, this boarding pass doesn't fly, but, well, you've got the receipt, so what the hell can I do? Right? You have the pass. Are people just collecting them on the ground? And they check your ID 800 times. Anyway. So I push print boarding pass. Nothing happens. The screen just sits there. I try to push it again. It seems to be frozen. Then I just kind of politely wait because I'm like, all right, these machines are from fucking 1985. You know, I understand that this is a computer that I probably once played Oregon Trail on that's been converted. Somehow they've hooked up a screen to it that's not just black and green. That's how far along they got. They've gone through these backflips so they can keep the same fucking computer from 1994. It's beige and it says Tandy on it. That's what I know. So I wait, and then it just goes back to the check-in screen. So then the check-in lady, begins her work with, I need your boarding pass. Hi, how are you? Yeah. I need your boarding pass. And I say, oh, I pushed print and it didn't come out. And so she goes ahead and says, you must have pushed print receipt. So you're going to have to do it again. And this time push print boarding pass instead of print receipt. Now, I didn't bother to argue with any of the points. Point number one, which is no, I didn't. Point number two, which is if I pushed print receipt, wouldn't I at least have a fucking receipt instead of nothing? I mean, either way, the machine seems to be broken. And point number three, real nice customer service. Jesus. Oh, well, you must have fucked up. So you're going to have to do it again, and this time try not to fuck up. Very good. Can't we all just agree? Because this is how I choose to go through my... I, in my life, in my professional life, deal with people and people dealing with machines often. And I do see a lot of user error. This is not an uncommon factor that comes into play when troubleshooting technology. I am prepared to admit that. That it is far from novel to see, oh, this person doesn't know how to use this. But you know what I say? I just say, huh. Well, that didn't work. Maybe we should try it again. I don't say, hey, idiot, do this or that. I say, well, you know, these things can be touchy. Let's just try it again. Because who knows? Because you know what happens? I'll tell you what. 9 times out of 10, you are right, and it's user error. But you don't need to point that out to somebody in this case, because it's not like I'm going to be back there tomorrow using the same fucking machine, and it's like, ah, see, I pushed print receipt, but now I know print boarding pass. I know to push the button that says the text of what I want it to do, not just the other option. You can push a button that says the text of what you want to happen or any of these other buttons. And then I push the other buttons and then what I want to happen, which was on the other button, doesn't happen. Anyway, couldn't have been worse. And then, you know, okay, so then I go to Terminal B. Now, if you've ever flown out of Denver International Airport, you know there are three terminals. A, which is where everything is. C, which is also where everything is, and B, which I wasn't even sure was an active terminal because I've never been in Terminal B. This was like the great unknown. I thought B stands for Beetlejuice Sandworm World. That's all I could think that would possibly be in this terminal. I couldn't think of what would happen when I got in there. So I go into Terminal B. First thing I notice, you go up this escalator. They have had a Harley in Terminal A and C right off the escalator, and you put your name and your address, and then maybe you win the Harley. And I'm here to tell you that they've had the same fucking Harley there since the day they opened. Now, maybe they're giving somebody else a Harley. I don't know. I don't know what the accountability is on this contest, because it's not like they have a picture of some guy on a Harley, and it's like, this guy won. Or maybe it's like, as long as we give it away some... They have 4 billion entries, and they've never given it away. I mean, I guess you could get a lot of addresses, because it's like, well, fuck it, I have 2 goddamn hours. Might as well take a shot at winning a Harley. Well, in Terminal B, they have a Ducati motorcycle instead of a Harley. So this was already Twilight Zone. Now it's set up exactly the same, except the things are different. So where they have the standard issue airport McDonald's in the other terminals, for example, they have a restaurant called Steak Escape. I don't know what this restaurant serves. I know we had one in town and it closed. I'm pretty sure they put fries in like a drink cup instead of a fry holder. And that's all I know. And they have a hot air balloon as their, you know, symbol. Which seems really dumb, except when you consider, like, well, this one has a crown, this one has a clown, this one's got a frown. Turned upside down. And a cowboy hat. So the Steak Escape may be the last... It could be the last Steak Escape in existence. I mean, I started thinking about, what if this is like a Twilight Zone thing? Where there's this one Steak Escape, and it's just... The supplies just keep coming in somehow. They keep sending paperwork off somehow. And there's just a warehouse of Steak Escape stuff, but there's, like, no CEO of Steak Escape. No company owns it. It's just sort of... One day they'll come in, and there'll be no shipment, and they'll go to call, and the numbers are disconnected, and they'll realize they've never had a website. And they'll be like, well, I guess we're closed. I don't know how long we've been closed. It could be several decades, but we are definitely closed now. I also saw somebody had erected a hammock in Terminal B, which hung from the ceiling. Now, this was like a... You know how you see, like, those mountain climbers, right? Like National Geographic shit. And they pitch a tent on the just the sheer rock face of a mountain. Which, to me, is, like, the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Oh, yeah, you know what I'm going to have a good night's sleep doing is wondering if I'm just going to fall to my doom all night. You may as well just keep going, as far as I'm concerned. Because if you're just going to die, I don't know, I don't want to wake up to the sensation of falling and then be about to die wrapped in a crazy ass tent. And the other thing about dying in one of those side of the mountain hammocks is nobody feels bad for you. Every single person who finds out that that's how you died is going to say, yeah, you slept on a sheer rock wall. What did you think was going to happen, asshole? Where do you think you are? This is not the moon where gravity would let you perhaps drift down. No, this is the planet Earth where the rules have been pretty much the same as long as we've been able to perceive them. So yeah, of course you fucking died. What? So this fellow had erected this tent slash hammock and somehow hung it from like these rafters in the ceiling. So he was suspended 3 or 4 feet above the ground at Terminal B. It kind of just looked like a... you know, if a moth or a butterfly who was really into Korean pop music had made a giant cocoon in Terminal B. And this didn't seem to be a problem for anybody. Now, and it brings up so many questions. I mean, did he just happen to have this with him and was like, you know what? I'm going for it. I'm going to just go for it. Or does he bring... Is this like a regular thing he brings and was like, I know what happens. I got a 4-hour layover. I'm bringing my fucking hammock. Because that's worth it to me. That, to me as a human, seems like a worthwhile endeavor. I don't know. It's very difficult to speculate on these sorts of things. I wonder, like, when he put it up. Because here's... Like, one of the things that separates me from the animals... which is what I call people that do choices I don't approve of, I would not have the guts to put that up, to erect this tent in Terminal B. And even if I had the idea, and even if I thought it was a good idea, I'd be like, I don't know, man, how far into erecting this hammock do you get before someone... Sir! I can't imagine it would go long. Although I do feel a little like... Once you're in the terminal, things get a little more lawless again. You know what I mean? I don't see a lot of security in the terminal. I also didn't see a lot of security in the movie The Terminal. I also didn't enjoy the movie The Terminal very much. Although my hate of it was tempered because my friend hated it a lot. And he just was talking about it, and all I could think was like, I didn't like it, but sure did hate it with this level of passion. It also feels a little lawless because, like, you know, they got all these little stores in the airport where the people work, you know? And they're always, like, eyeballing you. Like, is everybody stealing from those stores except me? I don't really steal stuff from those stores, but maybe I'm the only one. Maybe everybody's robbing these stores blind. Because they just say, travel pillow, $16. Well, this is a necessity, so fuck you, I'm taking it. I don't know. If everyone is, I'd like to know. Because I'm in there, and, you know, they've given me the shifty eyes the whole time. Like, listen, I'm going to pay for this bottle of water. Even though you're charging an exorbitant price. You know what? I'm not falling for your game. I feel like you're trying to trick me into stealing this and justifying it, but that'll weigh on my soul. So you know what? I'm not doing it. So maybe next time. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what their game is there, but they're playing a dangerous game. I'll say that. I will say that with certainty. I don't know. It's like those little stores, too, and they all have the pull-down gates like you see on a store in a bad neighborhood. It's like the one, if you've ever been to, like, a convenience store in, like, a real shitty neighborhood, like, you pull over and get gas, and then you go inside, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, based on this convenience store, this is either a very paranoid owner, or it's an awful place to be, and I should not be here. It's always one or the other, though. It's not like... Yeah, they just, you know, this is how they build all their things, with the little tray that swivels around to put your change in. Very nice. And it's like the stores in the airport have that same vibe. Like, they're all considering, like, we are in a bad neighborhood, don't fuck around, okay? There has to be... Perhaps shoplifting is at an all-time high, but how many people are robbing the little store at the airport? There cannot be a lot of gunpoint robberies at those stores, can there? I mean, how would you even do that? That would be the most asinine. You got a gun all the way through, and then you're like, I'm going to use this to rob Hudson News in that fucking airport at Terminal B. That's crazy talk. I don't know. Maybe it's a good idea. Here's the other thing, too, by the way, about, like, robbing this. Like, I am not going to steal a Twix because the consequence, the risk-reward is very off-kilter. Like, usually they don't have pricey shit. I mean, they'll have, like, one little rack of Beats by Dre in case you ever wanted to buy the world's most expensive headphones at an increased price with, like, an 18% tax on top of it. Just in case you wanted that opportunity, they are willing to provide it. But, like, you steal your bottle of water. I got the big Fiji water. I mean, then you get caught. I feel like you would probably miss your flight. That would be the lowest consequence, right? Is you would just miss your flight. And then do you think, like, the security walks you to the thing and they're like, this guy missed his flight because he's a stealer. So no need to, if you miss your flight, do they just put you on another one? How does that work? If you're already checked in and you've got your boarding pass. I mean, it would be good when you're sitting in the little... I picture, anyway, that you would be sitting in the interrogation room. And they're like, hey, guys, I know I did a crime, but, boy, I got a flight to catch, huh? That'd be a good one. Maybe you could charm your way out. One could. I had an interesting experience in that... I rented a car for the first time in my life. So that was a new thing for me. It's like harrowing in a way and also not. I have to say, as you drive a car away from the rental car place, you know, and you just put it on your card and stuff. So, and I did it all at a kiosk, so I didn't even talk to anyone there either. It definitely feels a little like you're getting... This is the closest I'll feel to stealing a car, to the thrill. This is my gone in 60 seconds, is I go to a, you know, Alamo rent-a-car and get into a Chevy Spark and drive it out of the lot, floor it, hoping that they don't hear the tires squeal and realizing there's no chance of that because it's impossible to make that happen. I rented a Chevy Spark, which I think is a hybrid. I'm not really sure. it would indicate from the name, but it could be a spark in that it's just like the beginning of something, but not really something. Like, it's like, oh, well, that's an indicator that something's about to happen, or we had the spark of an idea for this car, and then we just kind of made it from the spark. We didn't pursue any research and development. We just said, like, hey, you know what? That's a robust spark. Let's go with it. It was a color that I can only describe as mayonnaise with urine in it. A sort of a yellowish, light, creamy yellow. It was hideous. Which actually works out great. And I'll tell you why. When you're renting a car, I don't know. I mean, I'm not like a car status guy. I don't know if you guys know. But, so when you're renting it, it doesn't really matter. Like, I don't care if people think this is a shitty car, right? This is not the color I would prefer on my own. However, when you go to get back in your rental car after you get in at like 1 in the morning and drive to your place and go to bed at 2 and get up at like 7 and you're stumbling around looking for the car you drove, it's actually really helpful if it's an ugly-ass, crazy-looking car. Because then you're like, oh, well, which one's the shittiest one? I could just go towards that. I guess you could also hit the panic button, which I had 2 of. Now, this is a weird thing they do. You rent the car, and they give you 2 sets of keys, which, you know, that's nice, right? Maybe my wife is going to drive it somewhere, or whatever. Except they put both keys on, like, an unbreakable steel ring. This is not a key ring. This is a solid cable that's crimped together. So you cannot separate. So I have these 2 big-ass key fobs plus a huge plastic keychain. And these are that's the lowest amount of keys I can have for driving this car. Now, why I would possibly need both keys and then to have them on the same ring makes no sense. Now, it was explained to me before, and this is a little Consumer Reports update that I know you all love that sort of thing on this show, that it's an important aspect. Consumer Reports update. What happens with rent-a-cars is they sell them back. Now, if you've ever purchased a car that's certified pre-owned, and they'll say, like, oh, it's had 1 previous owner. Well, guess what? A car rental company counts as 1 previous owner. Because, yes, it's only been owned by 1 other person. Now, this would be basically like if I owned a car and then just left it out in front of my house and said, hey, any asshole who wants to drive this can come, and as long as you pay me like $9, drive the shit out of it because it's totally consequence-free. And then I sold it back, and I'm like, oh, I'm the only one who's owned it. And I didn't even drive it that often. The Chevy Spark, I would describe the driving experience as bad. Very bad. Using my eloquence and knowledge of cars, I would say it was not good or satisfactory or really a thing. Driving that car is a thing that people should not do. As a general rule, I would not advise driving that car. What happens is, when you hit the gas in a Chevy Spark, a noise sort of happens to indicate that the gas has been struck by your foot, and the engine revs a little bit, and then sort of slowly starts to go. And this is like a good half a second, which doesn't sound long, but when you're in stop-and-go traffic, it is very annoying. I did make a discovery that you could throw it in low gear and then get a little bit more action in your traction. So I was shifting between low and regular gear, which I'm sure is not how this car is intended to be used. And also, you know, I wondered, I was like, maybe this car's like fucked up. Maybe the transmission is fucked and that's why it's like this. Goddamn car has 3,000 miles on it. So that seems almost impossible, don't you think? A little too impossible. Yes, I really do think. Some pretty important stuff happened. You know, I visited family. It was great. We did some wine tasting. I did my second ever wine tasting event. We went to some wineries. Now, I don't know if this is a winery because I don't think they're making the wine there. I mean, there weren't fields upon fields of grapes, but they had the wine there. Now, the first one we went to, I think I rubbed the person who worked there the wrong way. Even, I think that she took my saying how little I knew about wine and my jokes about it as me devaluing what she considers valuable of life. Although, when asked a couple of questions that seemed like kind of the normal questions anyone would ask, she had no idea. And she referred us to the expert at the winery, which was another lady who had taken a weekend course at some city college about wine. And it had been a long time ago. And she did keep the textbook. So these were our experts. So I was a little taken aback because I was like, hey, wait a second. Hey, I'm asking you these dumb questions, but you don't even know the dumb answers. So maybe that's why. Maybe it's like, if someone's asking these high-end questions, you can just beg off. But when I'm like, so what is a grape? Is that like on a bush or a tree? And you don't know, then it's like, now I feel like a total asshole. Because I should know what a grape is. You know, can you transform a raisin back into a grape? I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe. Wine tasting, I don't know. I've gotten better at drinking wine in that I can drink it and at least enjoy how the drunk of it on some stage of development. But the flavors, I don't really know. You know, you're saying like, ooh, that's very barnyard. And I'm like, what the fuck does barnyard mean? I feel like people come up with these terms or these words for the tastes of things. And then it's not really about like that is in fact a representation of barnyard in some way. It's more just, this is what we've declared as barnyard. So that flavor, when you taste something like that, is now barnyard. It's sort of like how we've all sort of agreed what cherry candy tastes like. You know, the sweetness with a little bit of tart. How we've all sort of agreed that lemon candy is sort of good and also sort of like lemon pledge furniture dust cleaner. You know, we've taken these standard ideas of flavors and been like, that's what it is now. That's what I'm comfortable calling this flavor. We also went to a very fancy wine place that I honestly didn't notice the difference. Well, here was the big difference. At the fancy wine place, everyone was wearing a uniform which consisted of a plaid shirt and pants, and it was tucked into their pants, and they all had what appeared to be expensive haircuts. That would be my primary thing of, like, the expensiver wine place. Also, they were much bigger on the upsell. He's like, do you want, like, some appetizers or something? Which is like, go fuck yourself. Okay? No. We also ate at a deli before we went on this wine tasting. Because, so apparently there's this area where these wineries and stuff exist is called the Funk Zone. You know, as in it's like funky. And I was like, that sounds like what I would call my groin, my V on a sweaty day. That is the Funk Zone. I get what you're saying. It's funky. But funk and funky, I don't know. I don't like it. You're taking a risky path there. But the lady who worked at the place said they'd been there for quite a long time and said that before it was the Funk Zone. She described it in her own words, which I then capitalize and take, because it's much better, as the Industrial Hobo Swamp, which I really liked. I think the Industrial Hobo Swamp sounds like a pretty great, you know, adventure. You know, and then, like, you can adapt that, like if bums do get on planes, that's the, you know, aeronautics hobo zone or whatever. They were also having a fiesta downtown. Here's what happens at the fiesta. Everyone gets drunk and they sell these eggs on the side of the street. This is a real egg, and they've taken the egg out of the shell. So none of the sticky parts in there. And what they do is they crack a piece of the shell open, fill the egg with confetti, and then seal it up and paint the whole thing to look like Spider-Man. I'm sure they paint it to look like other things too, but I saw Spider-Man repeatedly. So they make, you get a, some Spider-Men, Spider-Men eggs, and what you do is you walk down the street and hit people with, smash these eggs on people. So I had a fiver, a $5 bill. That's what we big shots call a five, is a fiver. I took this fiver and handed it to one of these gentlemen, thinking he'd give me like a dollar's worth of eggs and $4. Normally, when you make a transaction somewhere, they have a price of a thing, and then you get that thing. I don't, for example, if I go to the grocery store and pick out an apple and then give them $20, they don't then give me $20 worth of that item, and then I walk away with far too many apples. They give me the change. However, this man went by a different economic plan and handed me an entire huge pallet of these fucking eggs. So now I had, conservative estimate, 30 of these eggs that I'm carrying around with both hands. So I, you know, smash some on my brothers. They smash some on me. My one brother put one in my shirt and smashed it on my back, and the other one put one down my pants and smashed it. There is still confetti floating around as a result of this afternoon evening. I had to strip my pants in a restaurant to get some of the confetti out. I just got pantsless in the bathroom just to really, really undo the confetti damage. Well, here's the other weird thing. So I had so many eggs that I was just giving them to people. And a lot of people would be like, oh, no, no. And I was like, no, I'm not selling these. Just take them. Just have one. I have too many. Every single person, without fail, took the egg and then smashed it on my head after I just gave it to them as a stranger. A stranger gives you a fucking egg, and what do? You just smash it on his head? That's where we are. Why wouldn't you smash it on your friend's head? He's right fucking there. He's got a dumb-looking head. Give him what for? I gave you the egg! And then you smash it on my head. So I was covered in confetti. Probably the biggest moment of magic was we picked my sister up, and we rode these hippie bikes back from where we left the car we rented, right? So all of us are on bikes, these crazy hippie bikes. I was on a bike that was too tall for me with my sister's backpack on the front and another bag on my back. So that was good. I was crushing my testicles but enjoying myself. There was a surfboard rack on the side of the bike. My older brother was on a hippie bike that was covered in burlap all over. This was a Burning Man leftover. And, you know, his definitely looked the most post-apocalyptic is how I would describe it. And he, and then my sister was standing on the back of his bike on the pegs. Now, to round this all out, really, I think the finishing touch was my younger brother, who was also on a hippie bike. His was like all these pastel colors and shit. And he took my sister's rolling suitcase. So what that meant is he extended the handle and held it on the ground, and it rolled next to him as he biked, which just looked great. And I can't imagine it was good for the suitcase because the bearings must have just been burning away. You know, that's probably as far as that suitcase is tested and meant to roll in its entire life. And we just did it in like 10 minutes. But anyway, we biked, you know, I don't know, a mile back in this formation. I mean, we looked like a fucking posse. But it was kind of wonderful. I don't know, I was like, This is everything I'd expected from a family trip, is to be rolling deep with these fucking weirdos, myself included. All right. Well, there you go. There's some more stuff, but we'll get to it later. See you guys next time.